It's Friday, November 21st, 2014, and welcome to episode 171 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Ritz.
I'm Mike Joya.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And we're going to be posting this show a little bit early since Thanksgiving holiday is coming up. But we've got a couple of different topics that I think will be of interest to many teachers out there. First topic we're going to tackle is using video in the classroom and some of the things that we're doing here at EIU in the Instructional Technology Center, and thought we would share some of the issues and things about file sizes and just kind of logistics about running it out. Then, Cindy, we got our tech picks coming up.
We do. Out of necessity here. So I'm going on a trend with more of the accessories than the tech itself anymore.
And I believe Mike's getting ready to take a trip, so might be checking out a little bit early here. Yeah. But I think you'll share a tech pick that might be related to that.
Yeah, maybe.
So here we go. Spend a little bit of time talking about some of the video projects that we're working on here at the Instructional Technology Center. We've got a kind of a new trend where we're really increasing the use of video in teacher education programs across the nation as part of evidence-based performance assessment. And there are 35 states, I believe, in across the nation that are participating in something called EdTPA, which is like a teacher performance assessment system. And one of the requirements of that is for students to record themselves for 20 minutes solid, no cutaways, nothing, and then post that as part of their essentially portfolio as evidence-based teaching.
Did you do that when you were in teacher ed?
Long time ago.
I did too. I did it in the in the mid 80s when I was in.
The video cameras were a lot bigger back then.
And we did, they called it micro teaching. Mm-hmm. And they videotaped it, and then you went into a room and you had to analyze and assess yourself and you know, because, really scrutinize your performance.
Right, because we came along at a time when the VHS tape and that four, you no longer needed to have a recording studio or anything.
Right.
You could just buy, your big old VHS, put it on your shoulder. Back then, the tripods and things and record. Yeah, I forgot about that. We did do that.
We did. So it's like, those cycles that things come back around just a little differently.
But it's very interesting because I remember all the challenges that we had back then. We were recording to tape. Mm-hmm. So then you just popped a tape out. Of course, now in the internet world, it's completely different because we're digital.
Right.
We can post it out to YouTube or some other video sharing site. But there's still the challenges. And that's one thing that I want to talk about. Saying that you can do something and then doing it is really two different things. And we're kind of moving from that theory to the practical, now let's do it. And just a few issues and things that we're running through. We have these little Kodak, they're called PlaySport ZX5 cameras. We have about a dozen of these that we check out. And right now our students are out in practicum. And then we do have a number of student teachers out there as well, checking these things out, usually on a daily basis for 24 hours. And then bringing them back, it records to an SD card. But what we're finding is, a 20-minute lesson, and I'm going to write up a blog post about this to share out there with some of the other community that are, facing these same issues. But essentially a 20-minute video, and I've done some prototyping here, is about 1 gigabyte for recording at what we call 720p format, the regular HD format. If you record in what's called 1080p, like your high-definition television, which most people, a 20-minute video is 1.5 gigabytes.
Wow.
And then these Kodak ZX5 actually have a setting that's called WGA, and that's the lowest quality setting. It's kind of meant for longer recordings. And if you record in that format, it takes it down to about 600 megabytes. So it's, about a 40% reduction.
Sure.
And I know I'm probably boring people with some technical details, but when you're doing with this with 100, 200, 300, 400 students, it really, really adds up.
Absolutely.
And then we're requiring our students, as I said, to do this 20-minute, recording, and then put like a little title slide at the beginning and the end, put a date or something on it just to dress it up. So once they have it on this SD card, they have to transfer it, which is no big deal because, you know, they can either plug the camera in with a USB cable or take it out and put it into an SD card reader. Right. That's not a problem. But whenever you take it into Movie Maker or iMovie, you have to render it again. Well, that's at least a one-to-one. Mm-hmm. And in our case, it probably, you know, so if it takes 20 minutes, you're spending another 20 minutes sitting there waiting for it to render into this new project. So it is very, very time consuming. And I guess the best recommendation of things that I tell the students with these cameras, because it's the first time they're checking out, is to do something called rapid prototype. You know, go through the complete process. Turn this thing on, do a 5-minute video of yourself. You know, make sure you're familiar with the camera. Make sure you're recording. In this case, we like to do it at the lowest setting because there's no need to have that extra high quality mm-hmm. because that's more space. And we just don't have the luxury right now just where the current state of technology is. You know, the bigger the file, the longer it's going to take to upload and process.
Everything, right.
And there, you know, we're going to be uploading this into a LiveText performance assessment system. Some people will upload them to OneDrive. So, you know, all of these things take time.
Right. And so when you start talking about hundreds of people doing it, that's a challenge.
It is becoming challenging. You know, like I said, any one-off, it's not so bad. But whenever you start adding all that extra traffic, and then just the checkout of the cameras, we're checking out easily between 5-10 cameras a day. So 50 to 100 cameras a week.
Wow.
Through, you know, that's a lot of turnover.
Do you give them a tripod or something?
We have a little, just like a little cap that they can plug in. And it's
sort of like a kickstand.
Mm-hmm. That they can do. Or we also have a little pop bottle cap, which, believe it or not, works very, very well because everybody can find a 2-liter bottle.
Yeah.
You know, the tripods, again, logistically, thinking this through, these students are taking this out, you know, to satellite schools all around, you know, mm-hmm. an hour, 2-3 hours away from here sometimes, and then bringing that equipment back. Of course, the other challenge being in a checkout situation is if one student doesn't bring the camera back the next day, then you have another student waiting for one that's not here.
Are any using their phones?
Well, we've experimented with that a little bit. And in fact, I want to pick your brain here a little bit, Mike,
sure.
on that with the iPhone. Can your iPhone, have you ever recorded a video, say, longer than 5 minutes on your iPhone?
I want to say yes, I have. But when I try to send it, it makes me break it up into little clips.
Yeah.
So you can't send it because the file is massive. Mm-hmm. And it filled up my phone rather fast.
And that's what I'm hearing, you know, as I talk to other institutions and things doing this. It's like, well, yeah, everybody has a, you know, smartphone. And it's like, no, first of all, not everybody does. Second of all, what we're asking that mobile phone to do, nothing, I don't even know if the latest iPhone, the iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, if it can do it.
I don't know that about for length of movies wise. I mean, which is kind of interesting because, I mean, that was one of the, it's every
selling
year
point.
When the new, you know, iPhone comes out, it's about how we've improved the camera.
And right.
It's
like,
okay, that's great. But.
And see, that's what's going on here with this arms race to quality. That's great with quality, but that increase in quality increases the file size.
Right.
Which, you know, complicates the further processing and the video editing
right.
and things. So, and then the other thing is, and I've not tried it on the new iPhone 6, but I know the older phones, the 4S's and things, they would just get hot, you know.
Yeah, and I don't...
The processor just make them hot.
Yeah, I remember trying it on my iPhone 5, and I don't remember it getting hot, but of course I have a case on mine, so I'm not actually physically touching the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I you know, I think I did like a 7-minute video and then I tried to send it to Gmail or G Drive or something like that. And it made me break it up into like 1-minute, 2-minute clips.
Right.
Yeah. And then I had to use my video editing software to
piece it back,
put
together,
them all back together.
Slice it back together. Yeah. And just what a hassle it was.
So that's one of the things that we're kind of doing with this rapid prototyping, just trying to get a workflow out there. And we know it works well. Well, you know, we've done this for 2 or 3 years with these little Kodak flip style cameras. Problem is, Kodak went bankrupt and they no longer make these. Before this, remember the white flip cameras that we
mm-hmm.
used, you know, a decade ago? Talk about this evolution of technology. But back then, those flip cameras were recording in 640 by 480. And now then, you know, these Kodak can record 1920 by 1080.
Yeah.
And it, like I said, that just increases that file size. So for what we're finding for these assessment purposes, the lower quality, you know, is fine for doing that. But then if you get out to school and you don't have access to this and you're using, you know, a mobile phone, I'd, you know, like I said, you would have to go through that rapid prototype, just do a 20-minute, you know, video of, you know, something out there just to prove that your equipment that you have will work. But we are finding it challenging. We also have some Canon Handycam cameras. I think it's like an HFR 500 model. It also records on an SD card. You know, that's another issue.
Right.
If you're buying those, I would recommend buying what's called a Class 10 SD card because that's meant for video. It it improves the speed a little bit on the buffering. But even it, you know, talk about that phone chopping up. It will, after a half hour, it likes cuts it off, and then it'll make a second, second clip of doing that. In fact, I'm working on a project right now. It's a little bit over an hour that it did exactly that. So I'm having to paste them together, and then, you know, like I said, this does get time consuming because somebody had to sit there and record for an hour. Now we're coming back into the editing suite and importing it and rendering it for another hour. So.
Right. And that's why I was wondering, does somebody hold it and record it, or do they
have tripod.
They just set it up in the room where it'll pick up their audio.
Yeah, and we highly, highly recommend a tripod.
Try not to move too much.
Yeah, so some people do. Yeah, some people do, you know, have a friend hold it, but, you know, it does shake quite a bit. Or if you're recording something and if you're teaching a lesson where you want somebody to follow you, even a tripod just doing a pan and tilt and zoom, you know, just being able to follow that teacher around. But most of them just set it up in one corner of the room, turn it on, and just let it go. So you're getting the wide screen, wide shot.
So so have they also just used individual like webcams with a long USB cable or anything? Has anyone tried that?
I haven't tried that, but we had, you know, with all the tablets and things, that's the other route that some people are going, like with an iPad or like the Surface Pros. Mm-hmm. Some people are using that, and that, you know, that will work. I've used several iPads that way. Problem with the iPads is once you do that for 20 or 30 minutes, you have that huge file on your iPod, iPad. Mm-hmm. You have to get it off. Now, our kinesiology department, we've got an instructor that is doing some video recording with the Surface Pros. And that's working out really well with them because immediately as soon as that student is done recording, you know, out on the soccer field or whatever, the instructors ask them, the students, to bring a USB drive. And since the Surface Pro has the USB, they just pop that in, copy it off, boom, we're done, delete it off the Surface Pro, hand it to the next student in that shared environment. And that workflow-wise, that works really, really well.
It'd be interesting to see if they start changing, as opposed to recording the teacher to giving the instructions, but do it from their point of view, using one of those mountable
like a little GoPro
GoPro on the teacher and see how
the students are responding,
right? Yeah, like
that's the other challenge though out there, you know, for these assessments and things. We can't really do that in the K-12 environment anyway,
right?
You know, for where our teacher education students are going, you have to worry about the student privacy issues and parent permission slips and things like that.
But even just for yourself,
a teacher can,
to see how they're responding.
I mean, like in sports, they record it and see how, you know. Now they're starting to use those GoPro, cams, right, for the point of view. Because what you can see from, like, across the field as like, a coach or something is a lot different from what the athlete is.
Right. And that's what we're trying to do. You know, there's a lot to this teacher assessment piece, but doing that reflection once they've done the lesson, they've planned the lesson, they've instructed, now they're doing the assessment piece and the reflection piece of doing it. Another really neat piece of technology, which we don't have yet, but something I'm interested in pursuing, is, have you heard of the Swivl, SWIVL? It's a little, essentially just like a little stand that you put on, and it's got like a little track, and I don't know what the technology, if it's Bluetooth or infrared or something, but you've got like a little badge that you put on your shirt, and as you walk around the room, you can put like an iPad in this stand, hit record on video, and then as you walk around the room, it will swivel
with it.
and follow
and do that track movement to follow you.
Very
so essentially
cool.
Takes away, you know, that camera operator. If you're like me and you teach and you walk from one end of the room to the other going through. They even have the motion detecting, you know, that's, you know, even in that realm, video takes a tremendous amount of space. So you're only interested, and they have motion capture. So you're only interested if something moves, you know, it'll trigger.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even hunters have that out in the woods now, you know,
just
taping it out to a tree or something. Yep. When a deer walks by or something,
snaps pictures,
take the picture of the deer or whatever it might be. So, you know, these are all issues. You know, like I said, we're kind of into the realm of the practical, and we're doing this for some of the performance assessments. So, you know, even though we've done this for years in teacher education, and like I said, thanks for reminding me back in the 80s when that happened. But, yeah, I do remember.
I remember we had to buy our own VHS tape.
I do, too.
You had to buy it, and then you would go do it, and then go in and watch.
Now then our students will be telling, you know, 20, 30 years later, I remember we had to buy a USB
drive. That's right.
Yeah, we had to buy a USB drive.
SD card.
You had to actually download the video, and you had to do all these, like, you know,
the technology
things.
Is coming with all this cloud computing. It is coming, you know, to transfer this wirelessly. But the problem is, as Mike said, is the next version of the iPhone comes out and it doubles the resolution. They're talking 4K, and now Apple's talking 5K resolution.
Well, right, the new screens are 5K. They're boasting now for the iMacs, and it's like, okay, well, I mean, when it comes to, like, nothing is even being captured really in 5K yet. So, same with, like,
jumping
4K.
Jumping the gun a little bit.
Well, exactly. And like, you know, I'm always, the last TV I bought was, I want to say, you know, almost 5 years ago, you know, 60 inch, and, you know, now it's time to upgrade and I was like, oh, maybe these 4Ks look really good in Best Buy. And it's like, well, wait, nothing's being broadcast in 4K.
Right.
So why spend all that extra money?
Sort of like when we were buying our phones for 4G and none of us had 4G yet.
Well, it's that leapfrog of technology. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to get into that.
Which I have a TV question then, my tech guys. We were looking at televisions and it said they had a refresh rate. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
It's how fast the pixels get displayed on and off on the screen. So a higher refresh rate is really good for, like, sports and fast motion.
Okay.
If you have a slow refresh, it's going to look blurry.
Yeah. So you're going to get, like, for sports, sports is the classic way to determine. And it's if you have a low refresh rate, you're going to get, in a high definition TV, you're going to get the ghosting trail. Windows mice, you could have the ghosting trail as a feature. that's what you'll get, the higher refresh rate. And what it's doing is it's resetting the pixels when the frames come in.
Okay.
And how fast.
And that's exactly the same way, you know, that we're telling our students, the way that these cameras work. We ask them to change that resolution down from, like, 720 down to, or from 1080 down to 720. Right. You're essentially cutting the amount of data by half, which decreases the file size,
right,
which is kind of our goal right now, because we're bumping up, you know, 1 gig's kind of one of those magic numbers that some of these cloud services and things will start chopping you off, saying, hey, you're trying to upload too much or something like that. And all of this is a moving target. As the technology improves, as they come out with the 4K cameras, which they are, and the 5K, they're just prohibitively expensive right now. But we'll get there.
Well, and the same with file sizes. As the technology doubles, I mean, if you take a – they'll find a way to compress it down and not have much loss. Because the Blu-ray files originally, if you were to convert from disk to a MKV file or something like that, originally it was like gigabytes. And if you were trying to stream it, it'd take forever. And now I've seen some really good compression rates when it comes to MKV files or Blu-ray files down to under a gigabyte, you know, 700 megs for a full Blu-ray movie,
and
you compare it next to the actual disc and it looks almost exactly the same, because they've really compressed it well. So that's what you'll get into. They'll come out with a new type of file format or something when it comes and how it compresses it and things like that.
So you know, the other big thing that's really hitting us in education with all the screencasting and the flip classrooms, it's the same issues out there with all those videos as well. But I'm going to save this for my tech pick of the week. But there's some exciting news coming out with some new products that may help us here at EIU with some of that. These are issues. A lot of this sounds very good in theory, but once we get to practice, we've tried taking out as many of the bumps in the road as we possibly can here at the ITC, but we're really starting to have to scale it up. And when we were checking out, you know, 100 or more cameras a week, you know, we can definitely tell there's a demand there, certainly out there, because all of our teachers out in practicum, and those of the students that are out there right now, student teaching, that are required going through this pilot phase of this EdTPA, you know, it needs to work. It has to work for them because it's part of their performance assessment. So it's a bit more of a high stakes environment for them. Technology pick of the week this week, since we're kind of on a video theme, is a blog post, and I'll provide a link in our show notes, called 10 Video Projects Every Teacher Should Try. So this is a little over a year old, but it does give you some ideas, and I'm not going to read all 10. You'll have to go to the link to get the full story, but make a book trailer, try digital storytelling, film a thank you note, and I'll just leave it there for the top three. But, you know, as I said, video is the demand for video and for teachers and in the classroom really, really is increasing. Now, as a bonus pick, another thing that just happened this week that we're really excited about, it's going to be a little while before this is available, so we might still be part of that hype cycle right now, but I'm excited about this announcement. Microsoft Office 365, which we've just converted all of our faculty and staff back in October, mm-hmm. is going to be adding a video portal as part of the service, which means that all of our faculty staff would have access if we enable this. You know, it's just in the beginning stages right now for planning. But if this were enabled, it's simply a drag and drop interface. So, for example, this video that I'm editing right now that's an hour long, mm-hmm. I've got two parts to it. I could just simply drag those files up, go into the Office 365 video portal, and everything's taken care of on the back end. It will do all of those. You know, we're worried about mobile. Delivering to mobile, because it's mobile, you have to decrease the file size to deliver it. But it's using Microsoft Azure to do these different streams. And this is kind of the same technology, in just reading a few of the blog posts out there, that Microsoft's been using for the Olympics. You know, they've been broadcasting the Olympics for years, mm-hmm. out there, and that's a very high demand area. But one of the nice things for our students is it will be converting the stream down to a mobile friendly format that they can watch on their mobile phones.
Nice.
And I just saw a statistic this week that over half the usage on mobile phones now is mobile video. Broke the 50%.
I think that was crazy when the first TV phone came out. Verizon had it where you could pick up TV broadcast, and you're like, who's going to want to watch a five inch video?
Yeah, you know, that hasn't hit me yet because I'm more of a tablet big screen type person. Right. But do you watch video? I know our students are.
Not very often. I don't. Once in a while, you know, full disclosure, the only time I do is if it's something in Facebook or something that somebody's linked to, and I'll watch it. But I just had a friend whose daughter got married, and there was a sneak peek of mm-hmm. their wedding video.
And then make sure you're connected to a Wi-Fi connection and not using a cellular network where we're getting those overcharges and things. So
unless you're old school and you've been holding on to the unlimited data mm-hmm. package from Verizon for years, with a death grip.
Yeah, I'm not there. I'm my phone is due in December. My contract's up, and I don't know what I'm going to do. So mm-hmm. I'm going to have to make some decisions there. But anyway, this I'll provide a link to the announcement to this Office 365 video portal. But for us here, with some of our students and you know, some of the practicum students and things, again, logistically and being able to take care of the demand for, you know, hundreds of users, just getting that video to your instructor, you know, a student has to walk up and say, here's my USB. Or if we go to something, or YouTube, you know, if we go to more of an electronic format, it's like, upload it to this video portal, give me the link, send me an email with the link, and I, the instructor, will just click there, and then I can make the assessment. Or vice versa, if I wanted to send out a professional development video to my students, it's mm-hmm. like, boom, here's the link, I'll just make a quick screencast, here's how to do it, and then, you know, we'll talk about this in class for that flipped classroom.
Can they download it from the other end if they want to?
Uh-huh. They believe they can. There's an option. There's some tricks in YouTube that you can do that as well. Of course, you have to worry about the copyright issues and intellectual property doing that. But
education's pretty is usually pretty good, though. That's open It's yeah. open, especially for educational purposes.
Yeah, and of course, there's YouTube EDU for right. specifically for that education yeah. environment. Very but cool. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on in the video world, and as I said, it's kind of a moving target. But as the technology improves, we're kind of in that arms race of we're improving the resolution. Now we have to bump up our network speeds. Mm-hmm. It really is starting to open in some doors that we've not had available to us before. So I'm really excited about the cloud video portal. All right, Cindy, what do you have this time?
All right, well, mine was, one of those born of necessity type things. When I got my phone a few months ago, I'm one of those people, I've never taken the insurance mm-hmm. on a phone. And so a couple days ago, dropped my phone on the tile in our kitchen and was like, son of a gun, I'm going to be looking at a broken screen for the next year and 8 months because I've only had the phone for about 4 months. But when I bought the phone, I didn't get a case. I just had bought one of the protectors. And it was a heavier plastic, but you could see through it just fine. I think it was around $20. And that as I was looking at it, I looked online to see, information about what to do when your screen cracks. It said something about the protector cracked and not their phone. So I'm like, huh. So I started lifting my protector. It's only the protector that's cracked.
Saved it.
My screen is fine. So now that's the best $20 I've ever
Absolutely.
Spent.
Absolutely. Yeah. So really, it's not just plastic. It's got to be a tempered
glass. It's a tempered. And you can see the way it, I'm having flashbacks. Well, like when you break a windshield, how it breaks. Or we had a mm-hmm. patio door one time sure. that I shot with a BB gun, and it did the same thing, and that's what this did. And so I was so happy because I really thought my nephew bit the screen of my last phone, and did it. And so, but you can't. I mean, the touch is
still
exactly
works.
The same. There's mm-hmm. no slowing down.
And I found with the tempered glass screen protectors, don't peel mine off. Mine's a lot more permanent. She has my phone for the viewing audience or listening audience out there. I found with it that it's a lot easier to install too yeah. because it's more stiff.
It's
you just kind of line it up and drop it down, and I found that a lot less dust, a lot less. I feel it's just a lot better.
Yeah, the cheaper ones that are thin, you have to worry about the air bubbles.
The bubbles.
And you gotta
sure.
press them out. And
sure. But yeah, I've been using it when I got my 4S, I went to the tempered glass mm-hmm. Screen protector and have just loved it with it. Mine's a SpyGen is the one I've been using, and I have their case as well because it's a slim armor case because it's really small
mm-hmm.
And it has like a rubber bouncy.
Yep.
It's pretty nice.
See, that's nice because I had a rubber one on a case on my last phone, but I don't have a case at all on this one, and it hasn't been an issue at all. But boy, I'm glad I had that
yeah,
protector.
Right now, knock on wood here, I don't have the case on mine, but I had the Otter case
mm-hmm.
and if you've got an Otter, those are like super heavy duty yeah mm-hmm.
but they're so big
you compromise
so
much. So I had I was messing around with my phone. I have a little micro SD card that I can put in and out of here, which is really handy for
right.
video. We'll talk about that
yeah.
so but you can just pop this off, pop the back cover off, and put in a little micro SD card, whether it be music, videos, whatever mm-hmm. it's very easy to do, and you're not using any wireless service whenever you're doing that, audiobooks, things like that. It's just, just a lot of flexibility there. So I've had this off for about 3 months, and I've been carrying it in my front pocket of my shirt, and just have to be careful when I lean over that, it doesn't
yep.
doesn't fall out and break. But yeah, it's definitely different. I got so used to that Otter case, which was, like you said, just huge. That's on your belt buckle. So
yeah.
Well, and the insurance is like $100. The insurance for a phone is not
and
cheap.
And what I don't think most people know, as I found out, is whenever you do break something, there's like a $50 charge
right.
or something on top of that. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I thought I had insurance.
Right.
Like, yeah, and here's your deductible or whatever
right.
whatever
yeah,
they call
it. Classic insurance.
Yeah. So I haven't been doing the insurance either. And it's like, but if you're buying, $600 iPhone or something, I think I probably would. On that, do you have insurance on yours?
No, I don't. In fact, mine's more of a hand-me-down because we buy our phones outright.
Yeah, that's what this one's going
to
be.
Because mm-hmm. we still have the old, like I said, the old unlimited
contract.
Debt. That, so the only way to get new phones is we buy them outright. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're not really under contract.
No, but that's, I think a lot of people misunderstand. You're not really out any additional because if you buy a $200 new iPhone 6, they're getting that on their financing. And
right, yeah. It's all, in the end, I figured it out that break even, actually maybe save a little money by buying full price for your phone. But of course that works that buy one every 2 years basically, mm-hmm. because which I get a hand-me-down from my partners.
Yeah.
And so she has the newest version and I'm fine being a year behind with the models.
Yeah.
But no, I don't, it seems like the major issues I have been recalled with the iPhones, mm-hmm. The battery burning up the screen and mm-hmm. on the iPhone 5S, the poor battery life in the iPhone 5 when I had that, you know, that was a recall product. So I just sent it back in.
Didn't cost you anything.
Yeah, it didn't cost me anything. So with using the SpyGen products, you know, I've dropped my phone from really far, like almost two stories, and just be like, oh no, you cringe uh-huh. when it happens, mm-hmm. and then go down and just the screen protector's cracked to swap it out. And SpyGen has like a replacement. If you crack it within a year, they'll replace it for like a smaller fee, like $8 or something like that.
Well, that's what nice. I couldn't find my receipt. I was like, son of a gun, I should have hung on to that. But I'm going, after I get off work today, I'm going straight over and buying another one because
And I find it's interesting that now they're also getting into where, when I had a BlackBerry, I had a screen protector, but of course it just covered the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It had a privacy screen, actually. So when you move it sideways, and now these are coming in with that privacy screen type feel, too.
Yeah.
Black out for security stuff.
Okay. All right. Where are we at? Tech picks. Mike's turn.
Mine. More onto the phones and stuff. I'm traveling internationally for a while, about 8 days or so, overseas. And, of course, we're all connected and stuff. So I actually have just yesterday went through the process of applying an international plan to my phone. So that can
because you have to worry about your mobile. Yeah.
Right. So
you don't want that roaming charge.
Right. and I have an iPhone 5S through Verizon, which has the international package. It has a SIM card. That's usually the easiest way to tell if you have a SIM card. Most people don't realize it's in there, but it is. And, you know, it wasn't too bad. You know, you probably could go to the country and buy a SIM card and swap it in and pay, but then you would have a local number.
But if they know you're going in advance, do they have to, like, flip a switch or something?
No. Well, it depends on the device, if they have to flip a switch or not. And that's typically a lot up to you. There's nothing really on their side of the house that they have to do. Like, the iPhones, the newer iPhones, can handle both networks. The CDMA, if you're Verizon, and then the rest of the world's on GMS, like AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile. Maybe T-Mobile, CDMA, I can't remember anymore. So, but these phones can switch back and forth. So what I did is just called, and they said, okay, you know, we can do some prorate type features where they charge you only for so much per day. But it's $25 for 100 megs of data. The place where I'm going, there's a lot of Wi-Fi access, so I wasn't too worried about going over the 100 megs. Right. And like I said, it's 100 megs strictly over cellular. So if you connect the Wi-Fi points and stuff, that helps. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, should be a little apprehensive connecting to strange random Wi-Fi points where you go, especially if you have some sensitive stuff on your phone. But then also for an additional $5, I got the reduced calling and text messaging rates as well. So as opposed to $1.30 per minute for calls, it's $1 a minute. And then as opposed to 50 cents per message, it's 50 cents to send and 5 cents to receive when it comes to messages. Now for iPhone, and a lot of my family and friends are on iPhones, I will be using data because iMessage travels through data, not text messaging. So which would be nice. And of course then you can always switch off to some type of like IM service or something. We can use Link while I'm there because that's Link for your mobile phone.
So your own Wi-Fi.
So there was that, and then the other big thing was going internationally was contacting your bank. And really you should contact your bank if you're traveling more than I would say about 100 miles from your location in a given day if you're traveling across country, especially without credit card fraud and cyber crime through credit cards. They put a little notices on your cards and your account saying if there's a charge from where the location that you're going, it knows to let that through and not decline
deny your service after you've just ate your nice meal in whatever restaurant. It's like,
what mine has always sent me a text message on my phone and says we just got a charge in this state or wherever, you know, is this you, and I send back yes, and it's like, but that way you do it ahead of time, you don't have to worry about that.
You won't get those, and So right, and it was pretty straight. It was pretty easy. I did it over the phone because I'm a people person and like talking to someone. But for the bank, it was actually, they said I can do it online. I could just go in to my online banking account, select the accounts I wanted to apply the travel notification to, and it would set it up all automatically. I wouldn't even have to talk to anyone, which was pretty nice. And then, of course, it's nice they say, okay, we have an international. If you have problems, call this number on the back of your card, which is the international
one. And you want to do all that up front so you don't avoid, you can't avoid, those awkward situations.
So the big thing now is deciding what cards I want to bring with me, because there's no reason, there's some cards there's no reason for me to break.
Right.
So now, picking that out and determining which one I want to bring and stuff. So, So I'm getting excited for it.
All right, cool.
That wraps it up for episode 171 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on our Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.